From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Hayward.
Richmond.
San Pablo.
Yeah, San Pablo.
I live in Novato.
Emeryville. Rock
Ridge. I live in Berkeley.
Coming up, it's a story from our Hay Area project where we answer your questions.
My question is, where are all the homeless folks coming from in San Francisco, and who gave them the tents?
We'll find out the answer. Then we'll head north to find magic behind the bars of San Quentin.
Like, I'll be tampering with people's mind. I really do be tampering with their mind.
And we'll hear how an Oakland artist is trying to bring people together by turning a tennis court into an outdoor studio.
It has to do with considering, in a sense, taking back the streets.
We're all over the Bay today on Cross Currents. On Thursday, San Francisco police shot and killed Luis Gongora, a 45-year-old man living in a homeless encampment of tents on Shotwell Street in the Mission. Contradictory witness accounts make the details hard to pin down, but we know the shooting happened within 30 seconds of the police arriving. Amidst the confusion, Mayor Ed Lee has declared all of the city's tent encampments a safety hazard, and he's ordered his department heads to create a plan for disbanding every one. The prominence of tents around the city caught the attention of San Francisco resident Elizabeth Marlowe.
We spout how liberal and open-minded we are, and yet we have this horrific tent city just in our midst. And that's the thing that's been troubling me most, that we don't seem to be practicing our values as San Franciscans in taking care and helping and supporting these people.
Marlo reached us through our Hay Area project, which asks what you want to know about the Bay Area.
My question is, where are all the homeless folks coming from in San Francisco, and who gave them the tents?
We sent KALW's Liza Veal to find some answers.
Okay, so I started trying to figure out where the tents are coming from by asking around on the street. There's a cluster of tents on Harrison, south of Market. I walked up to one, and a guy named J.J. Rogers invited me in.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
There we go. So we're inside your tent.
He's got a yellow four-person tent. Inside, there's foam sleeping pads. He has a little platform with a gas burner, everything lined up neat. You can hear the traffic and people right outside.
But it is something to, like, just have your own, like, little, like, special, like, space and just block the world off.
Rogers is 30. He's been on his own since he was 18. He says he left home because his family didn't accept him because he's queer. He lived and worked for several years in the city.
And, like, I worked at Bank of America, worked at Washington Mutual, John Morgis, like, I was working my ass off.
But he says he lost his job during the recession, couch surfed for a long time, and gradually became homeless. Having a tent to come home to makes living on the streets bearable for him. He's cycled through several over the years.
All my tents have been, like, just, like, friends have passed them down.
So that's how he got his tents. As for others,
I know the food truck guys were, like, they were handing out tents for a bit. The guys at the food truck?
Soma Street Food, a few blocks away.
Yeah, like, I got, like, three tents from them.
And he passed those ones on to his friends. After talking to JJ, I head over to Civic Center, where a homeless woman named Vanessa Wagner tells me some people just buy them. They're only $30 at Target.
So most people get their tents, they just buy them? Or, like, there's some places that give them out?
Goodwill's a lot.
She says people steal them from Goodwill sometimes, and from each other. I asked a few organizations, like the Salvation Army and the city's homeless services, about where the tents come from. None of them knew of any coordinated efforts, except for one rumor about a vigilante team of San Franciscans handing out tents by the hundreds.
My name is Sean Osborne, and I'm a native Bay Area.
And he's the founder of what he jokingly calls the Tent Mafia. Here's how it started. One day back in January, his friend Tara Spalti posted a video on Facebook showing a public works employee throwing tents from a homeless encampment into a garbage truck. Osborne saw the video and commented on the post.
I said, I want to replace all of these tents.
He got the idea to set up a fundraising campaign to buy tents and deliver them around the city to people who lost theirs.
And then the next comment, I just commented right after and said, if I set up a GoFundMe page, do you think people would donate? And she responded with, let's do it.
So we did.
Within the first few hours, we managed to raise over $4,000.
They turned that into about 350 tents. They even developed a whole sting operation for how to hand them out.
Hey, do you need a tent?
This is Bradley Volker. He's a taxi driver. Osborne recruited him to help, so he keeps his trunk stocked with tents, and at the end of his shift, he hands them out to people on the street who need one.
Thank you, appreciate that.
Just one person there? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
There are six drivers that volunteer to do this.
Yeah, I know one of the other guys would just pass the tents through the window, but I like getting out and having an interaction with them, you know?
At first, the drivers only handed out the tents after big sweeps. It's the city's policy to only take away tents that have been abandoned, or, like in the case of the recent Division Street clear-out, if people refuse to move them for sidewalk cleaning. Now the drivers are giving them out more freely to people who need them because the campaign actually raised $18,000. That's a lot of tents.
I understand why people want to give them out. I understand why people stay in them.
Emily Cohen works for the city. It's her job to get people off the street. But when people choose tents over shelters, she says her job gets harder.
We want people to be safe and have access to toilets and have access to showers and have a door that locks and closes. You know, that's really the goal.
Cohen's office works with SF Hot, a team of people that go out at night and invite people on the street to come to shelters. But a lot of them decline.
Like folks who have significant numbers of possessions, the shelter doesn't offer storage.
Or they have pets or want to sleep near a partner or don't want a curfew. The city's opened a shelter called the Navigation Center, which accommodates all these needs while helping people find permanent housing elsewhere. So far, the center has housed about 400 people. This new approach has been working, so the city is opening a new Navigation Center within 2 months. Cohen says they're getting better at creating exits out of homelessness. As for where they entered,
we are looking at a local problem. You know, I think that there's a stereotype that people flock to San Francisco when they experience homelessness.
But when they last counted, 71% of San Francisco's homeless people were living in the city before they found themselves on the street. So that's where they're coming from.
I think people don't want to imagine that their neighbor could be somebody who becomes homeless, that it must be an other. I think it's another way to other the homeless. And when really these are our neighbors.
Wherever they end up sleeping. In San Francisco, I'm Liza Veal for Cross Currents.
That story was part of Hey Area. You ask the questions, we find the answers. Got something you'd like a KALW reporter to investigate? Head to KALW.org and look for the box that says Hey Area. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Now we leave the streets of San Francisco and head up north to hear from the San Quentin Prison Report.
The San Quentin Prison Report.
Bringing you hidden stories from life inside.
In order to make something grow, you got to own a little dirt.
You don't tell. You see what goes on.
Because I like to be free. I like to move about the land.
You can hear a pin drop.
When we're children, we believe in magic. As we get older, skepticism often takes over. But it's a different story for people who run into the card man at San Quentin State Prison.
Like, I be tampering with people's mind. I really do be tampering with their mind. And right now, you're going to get two cards again.
Okay.
And we're going to see how this is going to work.
San Quentin Prison Report producer Nigel Poor brings us the story of the card man.
When you enter San Quentin as a volunteer, you go through two ID checkpoints, and then through a set of metal gates. Once inside the prison, you walk past the chapel on your right and down a slight slope that enters into the yard that's bustling with activity. That's where I first met the card man. He walked right up to me and started doing tricks, and I was totally hooked.
They called me the devil. They called me sorcerers. They called me all kinds of things, but I just don't pay it no mind.
That's Rodney Wiley, also known as Double R.
I draw people in because I entertain people and put a smile on their face, even when they're upset.
He really does put a smile on your face, but it's more than that. Last week, Wiley did something that felt like pure magic.
So when I was coming in last week, I found a card up by the chapel.
Mm-hmm.
Was that really just by chance that someone had dropped it there?
Yes, by chance.
I looked at the card on the ground, but I was just going to ignore it.
I knew you was going to pick that card up for some reason.
He was right. I picked it up. And when I walked down into the yard, I ran into Wiley. He immediately fanned out his deck face down and said, pick any card.
I guess I just work with your mind to make you pull that same six of hearts out.
And the card I found on the ground was also a six of hearts.
I just knew you was going to pick that card up and you was going to ask me about it. I told somebody that the two on the yard, they didn't believe me.
Okay, that was spooky. How did he know I would pick it up, and how could I pick the same card out of his deck? Erlon Woods, who's also serving time here, had a similar experience.
I think he's the devil. I think he's, you know, he can read minds, because I walked by him one day and I said, man, what card I'm thinking? And he said, the ace of spades. And I just looked at him. I said, well, maybe that's the most common card a person to think, because that was what I was thinking.
Wiley doesn't think it's devilish. He says it's not crazy.
I make up stuff, so it ain't no devil stuff.
Wiley's been doing card magic since he was a kid, and he got his start in an unusual way.
Yeah, when I was 15, I got hit in the head by the police, and I was in a coma for 6 months. They told my mother if I live, I'd be a vegetable. But then I stayed in the hospital a whole year, but when I came out the coma, the lady gave me a deck of cards. I've been doing card tricks ever since.
The first time I seen him do a trick was in 2008. We were in Old Corcoran together, and it blew my mind. He had, I don't know how he did it, it just was amazing. And over the years, he's gotten better.
Antoine Williams is one of the many guys who's impressed, but not everyone's drawn into what he does.
Well, I've been in the streets my entire life, so street card tricks is nothing new to me. It's like it's always some sort of trick behind the magic. I don't believe in magic. I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe that this is just some phenomenon that just can happen. It's a trick behind it. I just have to catch the trick.
That's Lewis A. Scott, also known as L.A.
He's shuffling cards because he don't want me to get his card up.
Wiley asks L.A. to pull a card, look at it, and then put it back into the deck. Wiley then shuffles the deck and pulls a card out and shows it to L.A. and asks him, is that the one he chose?
Not.
Okay, not. What was his card?
It was a two of diamonds.
I messed up then. I really messed up. I don't know what happened to it, but where did two of diamonds go?
L.A. points to a card that Wiley's clumsily hidden.
Is this it?
Nah, where did two of diamonds go?
Would that be it under your arm?
L.A. feels triumphant because he thinks he's just played the player.
Nope. That's just a D chord.
Okay.
I'll let you see it, though.
Wiley fans out the deck face down and says to me,
show him the two of diamonds in here. Just pull it out. Just show any one of them. Just show it to him.
I pulled a card from his deck, and sure enough, it was L.A.'s two of diamonds. So people like L.A. who want to discredit his magic have to admit that he's good. Even correctional officers.
They be calling me to stay at the desk all day. They didn't want me to go out this morning. They wanted to see some card tricks.
But it's about more than just wanting to see some tricks. Greg Eskridge explains.
It's to amaze you, to bring out the kid in you. That's what it's all about.
And in a place like San Quentin, some days, a little bit of magic is just what you need.
Okay, now let me see it.
Okay, now I'm picking a card out of the deck.
You got one card, get two of them.
Yep.
And which one you want to keep?
From San Quentin State Prison, I'm Nigel Poor for SQPR.
The San Quentin Prison Report is a partnership between KALW and the prison that trains inmates to be radio journalists. For more stories from life inside San Quentin, go to KALW.org, click Cross Currents. Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hina Baba. This next piece is a collaboration with our friends at Oakland Voices, a project where East Oakland residents tell the stories of their own neighborhoods. Most artists follow their visions in the privacy of their studios, but one Oakland artist is redefining public space, a park. Reporter Bill Joyce brings us the story of community artist Leila Espinoza.
Two tennis courts enclosed by a chain-link fence sit adjacent to Atoll Plaza Park in Oakland, near Lake Merritt. Lila Espinosa is here nearly every weekend. She hangs up a canvas outside the fence so passers-by can catch a glimpse of her painting. Today, it's the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe in the form of a mermaid, a painting she created right here on this tennis court.
It really is about creating a presence in a space, making a statement, and keeping a commitment. And whoever comes through during the process of that, that's great.
Espinosa comes to the park for many reasons. One of them is because there's much more space to create. She lives up the street from here with her 5-year-old son. They moved to this area after being displaced from a neighborhood near Highland Hospital.
And then when the landlord sold the house, we moved to a little tiny apartment over here. And we don't have space to do much, you know, it's tiny. But the rent is more expensive. Yeah, so now we're here.
What drives her to keep making art here is the idea that this work can bring people together.
We have a mermaid over here.
Oh, a mermaid? Oh, my gosh. Oh, honey. I wish I was a real mermaid.
Me too.
Espinosa points out the details in her painting to park visitor Sherelle Boyd.
Oh, that is so beautiful.
She's not finished yet, but...
That is so beautiful. It's so colorful. And it's so alive. Oh, I love that work. I love your work, girl. I love her work. Oh, heck yeah.
These interactions are what keep Espinosa inspired, helping park users realize that these spaces truly do belong to the public.
When you set up your studio or gallery or your anything, you're going to show your work or you're going to do some work, you set up your studio. You clean up, you organize it, you know, you take care of it. And it's the same for when you're doing anything out in public, you know, and it has to do with considering, in a sense, taking back the streets.
Every Sunday, when Espinosa comes to the park, she uses plastic gloves to pick up liquor bottles and trash along the courts before setting up her outdoor gallery. She realizes that this area of Oakland has a reputation for violence. But for her...
There's really no danger. The danger comes when we don't know each other and when we isolate ourselves and we don't talk to each other and we don't recognize each other.
Once the area is cleaned up, Espinosa lays out canvases inside the tennis court. One canvas serves as an invitation for park users to join in.
If you feel like you want to do something that's positive or creative or constructive, something that brings peace, this is the perfect time to do it because at this point, anything, you know, as simple as it is going to be beneficial because we're in desperate situation right now. You know, it's any little simple gesture has huge effect, huge impact.
Today, no one joins in to paint, which is Espinosa's ultimate goal. But for now, even if people just observe, she feels she's doing something right. Like when passerby David Ford stops to have a closer look at her painting, then notices the flowers in the park.
There's nothing on the face of this earth that's not beautiful.
Aww. We know that.
I mean, for real.
Hey.
I mean, I told her that. I see there's nothing. See that dandelion over there? It's sitting on that by itself. Ain't it beautiful? In its own self of space.
One. Ain't that beautiful?
Look at that leaf right there. Sitting there. Ain't it beautiful in its own self of space? Look at that.
It's this kind of beauty that Espinosa hopes to capture, or at least to encourage people to be more aware of. When night falls at Atoll Plaza, the sound of Brazilian music fills the park. It's another artist who comes here to feel inspired by the outdoors. Lila Espinosa sits cross-legged, leaning forward, painting until she turns off the lights on the tennis courts and returns next Sunday. For Cross Currents, I'm Bill Joyce.
Yeah.
That story was part of our Sights and Sounds Arts Project. It was produced in collaboration with Oakland Voices, a community journalism training program run in partnership with the Oakland Tribune and Maynard Institute for Journalism Education. Thanks to the California Arts Council and the California Endowment. And if you want more about the arts in East Oakland, check out the live show Sights and Sounds of East Oakland this Sunday afternoon at 3 at the Laney College Theater. It's a celebration of the arts in East Oakland, featuring dance, music, poetry, storytelling, cookies, and more. Come join us. It's free. Find more information at sightsandsoundslive.org. Our team includes Lisa Bartfi, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Truk Nguyen, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Jeremy Dalmas. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet.
Encore une fois, tu te trouves là.
This music is by Rupa and the April Fishes. They say their home is the Island Republic of San Francisco, but they'll sail over to Oakland to play at the Starline Social Club on Thursday night. Doors open at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hana Baba.
Bye.